May it please the court, my name is David A. Rowe. I am the attorney for the petitioner.
Mr. Rowe, you might reserve it. There's not much amplification in here,
okay.
So you might try to speak up a bit. Thank you.
Okay. May it please the court, my name is David A. Rowe. I'm the attorney for the petitioner. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal at the end. In the case at hand, the government has some jurisdiction, and I think it's important to take this the context in which the BIA appeal arose, in that it was irrelevant regarding whether the petitioner in this case had committed a crime involving moral turpitude or not. And the case at hand, this arose before the Board of Immigration Appeals as a motion to remand. So whether or not he had committed the crime involving moral turpitude.
Was the issue of moral turpitude raised before the BIA? I did not see it. I may have missed it.
It was not raised. It was,
well, so why
it
is
was
the,
mentioned.
Why
in,
is that issue exhausted? Why do we need to even consider it?
Well, in the context in which the case came before the BIA, it was irrelevant whether or not a crime involving moral turpitude had been committed. He was.
But that doesn't matter. I mean, the BIA mooted out the waiver issue, took the appeal. The appeal itself did not raise as an issue whether the crime was or wasn't one of moral turpitude or its consequences.
Yes.
I'm just asking you why, because it wasn't exhausted and we lack jurisdiction to hear unexhausted issues.
Well, it was only required, it only became a issue once the case came up on the petition for review. The only time it was relevant to argue that issue would be here before the Ninth Circuit.
Well, maybe that's true, but you still have to exhaust, don't you?
Well, there wasn't anything to exhaust before this level.
Okay.
I think I'm misunderstanding the question,
that's
perhaps.
Okay. Go ahead.
In addition, as I mentioned in the optional reply brief, the court has allowed amendment regarding that. I have argued on behalf of the petition that it was not a crime involving moral turpitude, and the record of proceedings at the previous levels did not establish it.
I have a question about what constitutes a crime of moral turpitude.
Yes.
It appears to me that this crime categorically constitutes a crime of violence. But I don't. Does a crime of violence also equal a crime of moral turpitude, or are they only sometimes overlapping? Does the question make sense to you?
Well, I think in a crime of violence there is a requirement under, I believe it's 18 U.S.C. 16 for crime of violence. It would require a threat of force or actual force being used, actual physical force. Under the crime at hand, the California Penal Code, it doesn't necessarily require physical force or a threat of physical force necessarily.
Well, for the sake of my question, I'd like you to assume to the contrary. I know you don't concede it, but let's assume that Penal Code Section 69 is a crime of violence. What is the relationship between the concept of crime of violence in the statute and the concept of a crime of moral turpitude?
It would be hard for me to cite an example where a crime of violence is not a crime involving moral turpitude. If this were an aggravated felony, which incorporates the concept of crime of violence, this individual, this petitioner, would still be eligible for a waiver subject to the 212H section of the Immigration Act.
But for the narcotics problem?
Well, the argument is for the narcotics problems, he doesn't need the waiver because these acts constituted acts prior to the, while he was a minor. He was still 18 years or younger. And as I cited regarding the FAM and the Title 20, there is an exception. As opposed to a waiver, there exists an exception where he, even with the admitted drug use, he could, he's still admissible for that reason. So he wouldn't even need the waiver. The criminal act would be waivable if necessary, and that, as I argued at the BIA level, and as well as in the petitioner's opening brief, it may not even be, was what context in which the case arose at the BIA level, whether or not it was a crime involving moral turpitude, had no relevance, and that's why it wasn't heavily argued at that level. It only became an arguable issue once presented before the Ninth Circuit. The other, going into a little bit further as to what you were questioning regarding the use of controlled substances within the FAM, the Title 20, it does specifically waive those admitted uses because he was under the age of 18 at the time.
What it has to do is I read the regulation or as I read the manual with applications for a visa, not with provisions for adjustment of status.
Well, part of attaining adjustment of status is going through the visa process. That is the Form I-130 document that the U.S. citizen father had filed on behalf of his of the petitioner, his son. So that's the visa petitioning process. And then in conjunction with that, he, upon approval of that, he can then apply for his lawful permanent resident status. I mean, it is part of the process. What prior to Immigration Nationality Act Section 245I, everybody, in order to attain their lawful permanent resident status, had to process through the consulate in their home country. The U.S. consulate or embassy in their home country determined that admissibility and admissibility issue, and that's where the Title 20 come into play. That was a consulate officer decision, and that's how you get, that's the interaction between Title 8 of the Code of Federal Regulations and Title 20 of the Code of Federal Regulations. And you still see a lot of reference to Title 20 in the context, for example, of becoming a permanent resident through the labor certification process, because all the codes regarding becoming a permanent resident or labor certification purposes are continue to be at Title 20 only. That would be the visa. That's in that case. I would like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal, if I could, Your Honor.
Good morning. Allison Igo with the Department of Justice Civil Division representing the Attorney General. The sole issue in this case is whether the petitioner who is removable was eligible for any form of relief. There is no question that Mr. Galvez was removable. He never contested that he was subject to removal. In fact, the notice to appear charged him on two separate bases, one of which is that he was found in the United States in violation of the law. Whether this is a crime of violence or not, I think is not necessarily relevant only because he was not charged with being removable on the basis of an aggravated felony. The question here is whether, even if all of the errors that the petitioner suggests, he was actually eligible for any relief. The only relief the petitioner suggests he was eligible for is adjustment of status. And, Your Honor, as you pointed out, the problem this petitioner has is getting past the requirement for adjustment of status that he be admissible. He does not challenge the fact that he admitted to drug use, which is a bar to adjustment of status. He doesn't only have to prove that he could get a visa. There is a separate requirement. And, in fact, it appears that the elements for adjustment of status appear on page 28 of the petitioner's brief. He has to show that he has applied for adjustment of status, which he did. He has to show that he is eligible to receive an immigrant visa. I don't contest that under the Foreign Affairs Manual, which is the manual that the Department of State uses to determine eligibility for visas, that he is eligible because the conduct to which he admitted occurred prior to his 18th birthday. But the statute, the INA, which is a separate statute and which is administered by the Department of Homeland Security, previously the INS, has a separate requirement, and he is admissible. And under the INA, 212A2AI, I believe it is, he is inadmissible because he admitted to conduct. It does not have to be a conviction. He admitted to conduct that is a violation of the controlled substances law. As a result of that, he is ineligible for a waiver under 212H because it is not a minor offense involving a small amount of marijuana. And so, therefore, he is not eligible for adjustment of status. He has conceded that he is removable. The only relief that he asked for was adjustment of status. It's clear that under the statute, he is not eligible for that. And so I would ask the Court to dismiss his case. The petitioner is, well, it displays a fundamental misunderstanding of the roles of the Department of State and the role of Department of Homeland Security. While the Department of State regulates visas, the Department of Homeland Security has a separate responsibility for the border. And even in all situations in which someone is issued a visa, they have to come and present themselves at the border, and there has to be a separate determination as to whether they're the case. This gentleman is not admissible, and so he's therefore not eligible for adjustment of status. If the Court has no further questions.
I don't think so. Thank you, Mr. Rowe.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the Section 212 that Title 20 of the FAM interprets, it's exactly the same Immigration and Nationality Act. It's not as if there is a separate act, and it's actually the same section of law cited at 212A2Ii, and that's the codification according to the INA. Again, it's not a question. Even if an individual is found removable, they still have a right to request a form of relief. It's not that once he's found removable, he's barred from applying for any form of relief. And the arguments in the briefs are that he does qualify for the form of relief requested, and if necessary, the 212H waiver, the form of relief being adjustment of status. And I believe that's all the time I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll next year argument in United States versus Butler.
Good morning. Richard Rome appearing for Mr. Butler. This case arises